Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Here's Johnny podcast. I am Larry.
And I am Justin.
We are double recording again this week.
Yes.
Next week, Justin will be at PAX.
I will be. I don't know. I'm excited for it. It's going
to
be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited for you to tell me all the things you do. I live vicariously through you as you go along your game journey.
It's going to be interesting.
You're going to have fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're actually recording on a Friday. Justin's had a crazy week in the lead up to PAX. But also, I'm happy we didn't record because last night there were tornadoes in my area.
Wild.
We were huddled in the bathroom, man, for like an hour and a half. There was quarter-sized hail. Like, I went outside after the siren stopped and looked, and there was like hail on the ground. I don't remember seeing. A couple of cities over, a tornado actually ripped through a mobile trailer home and like destroyed it, and a couple of people lost their lives. And I don't know if I ever told you this, but like, I saw the movie Twister when I was a kid, and it scared the shit out of me. And so
it's funny,
I don't,
because
like,
I kind of figured you'd be the person to be like, I need to go fucking hunt that tornado down.
No, that force. Obviously, when we reviewed Jaws, I talked about how like I don't go in the ocean, but there is a part of me that really wants to go shark diving, like get in a cage and do that. There is nothing that makes me want to get near a tornado.
That's fair.
Like, there's something different than like an animal versus like an act of God.
Yeah, okay, I see that. Yeah, that's fair.
And then one other thing off the top, I wanted to take a second. A week ago, we found out that Akira Toriyama passed away. Longtime listeners of the podcast know when I was going through school for my MBA, I watched all of Dragon Ball for the first time. So I wasn't allowed to watch it as a kid, and it was all on Crunchyroll thanks to Justin. I was able to watch all of it. And I loved it. It's one of my favorite anime. I've now also since read all the manga. Piccolo is one of my favorite characters in across all media. I also love Gohan, and I was going to the bathroom at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I take my phone down as a flashlight, but also like you gotta do something while you're there, right?
Yeah.
And I saw the news, and I didn't go back to bed till like 4. I was like just reading people talking about it, and it's just really sad. And then I was talking to you, and you posted in Discord, I didn't know that he created the characters for Dragon Quest.
Yeah, I knew about him through Dragon Quest, like, way before I knew him through Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball. Yeah, it's weird because, yeah, like you said, he made these very signature characters for, I think, almost all, if not all, of the Dragon Quest / Dragon Hero, or, sorry, Dragon Warrior games.
Mm-hmm. Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, Chrono Trigger was a big one. Yeah. He did a lot. I mean, obviously, like, we talked about it a little bit, and I work with somebody whose husband is very obsessed with Dragon Quest, and we pretty much just talked about Dragon Quest the entire next day. Maybe this will get you to check out Dragon Quest.
No, it most likely will. I mean, it was sad that he passed away, but I was kind of talking to somebody, and it's like, what was really nice was to see all these different creators, what they had to say about him. Like, another person who made One Piece came out and said something, a lot of the other shonen creators said stuff too. And I mean, he unfortunately passed away very young from that brain aneurysm, but, or hematoma. He had a hematoma, excuse me. But I don't know. I guess I just wanted, since you were on here and people listened to us, I just wanted to say thank you to Akira Toriyama for, honestly, a wonderful time going through it, and I'm excited to show my daughter Dragon Ball one day, and I don't know. It was sad.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was very sad, yeah.
So let's move on to something a little bit more upbeat. It is your turn. What have you been doing since we recorded last?
Oh, fuck.
Besides work.
I went and I saw Immaculate for work. What's I can talk that? About that. Immaculate. Mm-hmm. It's the Sydney Sweeney horror movie where she becomes like Immaculate Conception in an
I don't think I've seen any trailers for that. How is it?
You know.
Okay.
You know,
not one that we should cover in the podcast.
What's that?
Not one we should cover for the podcast.
No.
We have definitely trimmed down the movies we go to the theater for to ones that either we want to see or are getting good reviews, and then we crap all over it. Like, what was that movie called?
Talk to me. Yeah. I will say, there are times in that movie where it feels like the person who created that movie just wanted to see Sydney Sweeney in see-through clothing. Yep.
Okay.
Other than that, I've been doing a bunch of stuff for work. I can't talk about.
Yeah.
Like all of the stuff I've been doing is stuff I can't talk about, except for I've been continuing to watch Ted Lasso, which continues to be just fucking amazing. That's like my happy show. Yeah. I mean, really, that's it. A lot of video games I can't talk about. What about you, Larry?
For me, TV-wise, AEW. Obviously, keeping up on that.
Sting's back. He was gone for a week. He's back now.
No, Sting is still retired. It is sad. But my girl, Mercedes Moné, formerly known as Sasha Banks in the WWE, had an entire show dedicated to her joining the company on Wednesday.
Oh, nice.
In my opinion, she is the greatest women's wrestler of all time. She is amazing. People might know her if they don't watch wrestling. She was in The Mandalorian. And she also voiced some anime characters. I'm not sure who, because I don't watch a lot of anime, but I know she was giving out awards at the anime convention or whatever.
Oh, okay. Was she at the... no, I'm not even going to make that joke. It helps that I don't remember the name of the convention, but yeah.
It was the Crunchyroll's like awards show a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing. Okay,
yeah, they cool. do get annual awards. Then my comfort shows, Next Level Chef and Tournament of Champions. Next Level Chef, I just love Gordon Ramsay and Tournament of Champions. They really do get some like amazing chefs on there to cook. And I like the format. It's like pairing based on how you scored in previous tournaments and on other Food Network shows. But the judges are 100% blinded to who's cooking. Like they literally keep them isolated and then the chefs go away. And then they have someone who watches them cook, describe the dish. So they have no idea who's scoring on which. There's a lot of upsets, and I just really enjoy that. Movies, just the two that we're reviewing this week, Black Sleep, which we'll get to, and 20 Million Miles to Earth.
Books, Waifu Expo is the expo I was thinking of.
I am sure Kyber attends that, at least if not in person, then virtually. I want to skip to books.
Okay.
I haven't finished Do Androids Dream Electric I have not finished Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep yet, but my plan is to hopefully finish that tonight before bed, because Empire of the Damned, the sequel to Empire of the Vampire, came out this week, and I finally got my copy today, and I've been looking forward to this book for a while. And then just continuing on Song of Ice and Fire. Whenever my podcasts get cleared out, then I listen to the audiobook. I'm in no rush for that.
Yeah, that's fair. You got a long time. It's not like he's ever going to finish that series anyway.
So. Exactly. And I'm just listening to it. Like I said, when my podcast feed is empty, I go to that. Games. Continuing on Pokemon Yellow. I just beat Koga last night. I'm just playing with like Ash's team, basically. I'm playing with Charizard, Blastoise, Venusaur, Pikachu, Nidoking, my favorite. And then I'm using Mr. Mime because I can't get Mewtwo until after I beat the Elite Four. So
right.
And then I started Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And I think when I do beat that, Justin and I will probably do a whole ass podcast about it. Just drop horror for a week and just talk it. I am having an amazing time. I've been texting you and you've been busy. But you respond when I need you to. But
like... Well, I won't tell you that. I won't repeat the question that you asked me, because yeah, just in case people haven't.
I finished the first two like areas, and yeah. It's only like chapter 4 in the story. And you said there's 15 chapters, right?
Something like that, yeah.
And I've already had 20 hours into it.
Dude, yeah.
I've done every side quest. I've done every challenge. I've done everything.
Back in August or October, when I went to New York, we played the Junon area, but some of the stuff wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And then this last time in San Francisco, we were given 4 hours with right outside of Calm. Like we did Calm and then the area outside of Calm. And
the grasslands.
Yeah, I think I got maybe half the stuff done there. And then obviously, like, when I reviewed it, I was a maniac and was like, oh, I got time to do every single little thing in every area. I did Calm and Junon, and then I was like,
I gotta beat this game.
30 hours in, and I was like, oh shit, I do not have time to do this.
I truly think, and obviously I still have a lot of game left, but this is on track to being... 10 will always be my favorite.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you feel similarly to 9. We're gonna talk about that. This might be the greatest Final Fantasy game they have ever made.
Yeah, and I mean, they are... It was interesting because leading up to it, they were very... They were confident in a way that we haven't seen them be confident before, and obviously it's paid off. So I am interested to see what happens with Part 3.
Yeah, it's just truly remarkable. I'm just sitting there listening to music. I'm, like, barely riding the chocobos only because I want to walk around and explore. I won't lie, I have been neglecting Red 13 and Barret. It's just been Tifa, Cloud, and Aerith, and when you go into battles, I'm just using Tifa.
Listen, I've been, my main was, who was my main again? My main was Barret, because he's, like, super fucking OP in this game.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that in the Mithril Cave section, I noticed he had.
Yeah, I've been using him and Tifa. Tifa, yeah. God damn. I can't fall into your trap.
But it
your
is
your Tifa trap.
It is I just keep telling Devin thank you for buying me the PlayStation 5 for my birthday, because
you've been on a Final Fantasy train, man.
You
should have said thank you for buying me the Final Fantasy Presents PlayStation 5.
Yeah, that's all I've been doing. I mean, when I do finish these games, because I am going to go back and platinum 16. We'll talk about 16 in a second. I am intending on getting Ragnarok, because that's on my list to play, because I haven't played that yet. And then Demon Souls.
Oh, shit. When you get Demon Souls, let me know, because I will restart it, and we can...
Yeah, well, just do it for the pod, since I have access to it now. And
yeah, probably get Steven over and join us. Oh, you. I think you're just... No, can you still? I don't know. Anyways, sorry. Don't listen to me.
So the other thing is, if you listened to it last week, I was not starting Rebirth until I beat 16, and so I beat 16 last weekend. I really liked it. It is definitely different than Final Fantasies previously, but I don't have a problem with that. I listened to UFFs, and they had a lot of people write stuff in about it. And some people didn't like that, but, like, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed how they tried to do things differently. And what I really, really liked is the emphasis that this game did on story.
Yeah.
I think 15 had a good story, I thought, until all the DLC just decided to just go fuck around with everything. But this one felt different. This one felt more like a 10, a 9, a 7 kind of story, where most of the thought went in there and things went around it. I do think combat's a little simplistic, especially if you use those rings, which makes that game broken. But I mean, the story got me hooked, and I was like, there was parts where I was like emotionally being pulled. I thought the voice acting was fantastic. The soundtrack was great. I love the soundtrack. I like the remixing of all the old FF themes.
You know what I have to say to that?
What?
It's my little victory button.
Awesome. And I also loved the kaiju battles in it. The icons. I wasn't sure at first what I was going to think about that, but I ended up really liking it. So I told Justin, because obviously me and Justin we're here, even friends, because of Final Fantasy. And I wanted to rank our Final Fantasy games. Obviously, he and I haven't played 11 and 14. We've tried. We tried really hard to play 11.
I have played a lot of 14.
But have you beat it?
No, I have not.
Did you play it before Realm Reborn?
Give me 1 second.
Okay. But yes, we are actually going to give
you
our
mean this?
Current rank. Yes, that is what I'm talking about.
Yes, I played it before Realm Reborn. But I also did beat the base. I have no idea what that was. I did beat the base game of 14, like after Realm Reborn.
One day I would like to play it. The hard part with 11, there's just no fucking chance, because unless they do something to make it like literally where I can just turn it on and play it, because it's the only Final Fantasy where you have to do all these extra steps just to get the fucking thing to work.
There's always talks about them like re-releasing it on current gen hardware. Oh my god, I'm sorry. Yeah, but I don't know if it'll ever happen, because fuck man, it's
so I thought it's we would arcane. Go give our rankings.
Okay.
And that we would go from our least favorite to our favorite.
Okay.
So you can go first.
You want me to do my least favorite, and then you're gonna go, and
yeah,
then,
yeah,
we'll like, go back step and forth. It like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. So my least favorite is, oh wait, this is backwards. Sorry, my least favorite is Final Fantasy 3.
Okay. My least favorite is Final Fantasy 2.
Interesting. Okay. All
right. Your next one.
Final Fantasy 4.
Final Fantasy 8.
Oh wow, 8 is way higher on my list.
I don't like the junctioning system. I find the story to just be a mess, personally.
Yeah.
And I don't like Squall.
Nobody does. He's angsty and a little whiny bitch. My next Final Fantasy is Final Fantasy 2.
Mine is Final Fantasy 4.
Okay, I'm 5 is next for me.
3.
Oh, and then 1 is next for me.
One is next for me.
Okay, all right.
So I would consider those, that's like the bottom tier.
Yes.
Okay. So let's do our mid tier now.
Final Fantasy 13.
Final Fantasy 15.
Interesting. My next one, Final Fantasy 15.
Final Fantasy 12.
Interesting. Okay. Final Fantasy 8 is next for me.
Final Fantasy 5. I love the job system.
Okay. Final Fantasy 12 is my next one.
I think I had these in first. When I said 12, I meant 13. Now I have Final Fantasy 12. I've forgotten I.
Oh, I just wrote them out in numbers. I should have done that. What was the last one I said? Sorry, 12?
Yeah, we both said 12. So we had we had 12 and we had 1 at the same spot.
Yeah. Hell yeah. So now we're in our top 5, right?
This is our top 5, correct.
Okay, so 10 is for me.
16.
And then 16 for me.
6.
7.
9.
6.
7.
9.
And 10. But honestly, the top 5 outside of 10. That was hard. Like, and one thing I really thought about when I was kind of putting this list together and talking to you about it. There really isn't a bad mainline Final Fantasy game. It would not be hard for you to say, hey, Larry, I'm going to play Final Fantasy 2, which is my least favorite, and for me to be like, okay, I'll play with you.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, like, the weird thing is a lot of these, like, positions on my list can change by day. There's, like, specific ones that are like, okay, this will always be here. Like, for me, even in the mid category, like 13 will always be in that mid category. It'll never drop down lower than that or get higher, but it'll always be there somewhere.
Yeah, same with 12. Like 12 is just, it is fun to play. It's a fun battle system. No, like I don't know. I just think back to when my friend handed me Final Fantasy X when I was in middle school, and just very grateful because, like I said, I have no life 16, and now I'm no life in Rebirth, and I'm just smiling and just having a great time.
Yeah, that's fair. I did want to bring something up that I don't know if you knew about.
Okay.
There is currently a mod being made to bridge the stories between Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3. And you play as Brad.
Really?
Yeah. Like, and it introduces, like, the mimic. Oh my god, sorry.
Nemesis?
Work stuff. Nemesis. Yeah, like, introduces, like, his plight with the Nemesis. And, like, how he goes through it and stuff. So, because it's not for remake, it's for, like, the PC ports of the original games.
Ooh, so the old school style.
Yeah, because I'm not going to lie. I've been really itching to go back to Resident Evil 1, and I don't mean the remake. I mean
Director's Cut?
Yeah, like, I really want to do it. I might actually, that might be what I do at PAX, is just, like, pack my Steam Deck with a bunch of old games and just go to town.
I don't blame you. All right, ready to talk a movie?
Right. What one are we doing again?
The Black Sleep.
Right.
Black Sleep, and as I've been calling it for a long time, because I typed it in wrong and just didn't know what this movie was, it is not The Black Sheep, it is The Black Sleep. It's a 1956 American independent horror film directed by Reginald Laborg. Laborg was an Austrian film director, and he directed over 68 films during his career. Although most of his films were low-budget horror flicks, his most popular film was San Diego, I Love You from 1944, which starred Buster Keaton in a supporting role. This film stars Basil Rathbone, Lon Chaney Jr., John Carradine, and Bela Lugosi. Rathbone is known primarily for his roles in costume drama and swashbucklers, although he did appear in a lot of horror films. Some of his most famous roles were in David Copperfield from 1935, Romeo and Juliet from 1936, and perhaps most famously, he played Sherlock Holmes in 14 different movies between 1939 and 1946.
Jesus.
Yes. Lon Chaney Jr., I was surprised that we have actually never talked about him before. He is another one of the Universal Monster OG actors. He was the Wolfman. And he was also the Mummy. 3 times. He was also in Son of Dracula, Ghost of Frankenstein, and he was Lenny in Of Mice and Men. John Carradine is considered by many to be one of the greatest character actors of his time. He was Count Dracula in The House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula and Billy the Kid versus Dracula and Nocturna, granddaughter of Dracula. But one of his biggest non-horror roles was as Preacher Cassie in The Grapes of Wrath. And we have talked at length about Bela Lugosi, but one thing I do want to note is that this is his final completed role before he passed away in 1956, although he is in some scenes from Ed Wood's Plan 9 from Outer Space, which did not release until 1959. This film was actually re-released in 1962 with the title Dr. Cadman's Secret. Shot on a budget of $225,000, I could not find box office numbers for this film.
Not surprised.
I have a little bit of trivia.
Okay.
The hands performing the brain operation are actually that of a real neurosurgeon at Cedars of Lebanon Hospital in LA, hired by the producers to make the operation look as authentic as possible. Okay, Bela Lugosi kinda cool. was very unhappy with his lack of dialogue and reportedly pestered the director to give him more lines. Although Laborg did shoot some extra dialogue scenes for Lugosi, they were never used. Lon Chaney doesn't speak either, but apparently he didn't care as much. Released by United Artists as a part of a double feature with the Quartermass Experiment, the parents of Stuart Cohen attempted to sue the Lake Theater and distributor United Artists for negligence after their 9-year-old son died of a ruptured artery in the cinema lobby at a screening. Cohen then entered the Guinness Book of World Records as the only known case of someone literally dying of fright at a horror film.
Fuck.
Plot summary. We are introduced to a man on death row who's being accused of a murder that he claims he did not commit, and a doctor comes in and says, if you take this, everything will be okay. The man takes it, and he appears to be dead, and the doctor comes back with his Spanish friend and wakes him up and tells him that they gave him the black sleep, which allowed him to appear dead even though he wasn't, and he says, I need you, like, I will free you. They think you're dead, so your crimes are like clean, but you have to help me. It is then we find out that this doctor, Dr. Cadman, is trying to fix his wife's ruptured or broken brain. She had a brain issue or something. And he's performing these really sadistic and dark tests. One of the doctor's assistants, actually her father, who was played by Lon Chaney, was supposed to be fixed, but all he did was keep messing with him, and he keeps operating on the brain. The cops are starting to figure out what's going on because of all the disappearing people. The Spaniard assistant is a scumbag and helps him to lead to getting caught. When the cops finally figure it out, they come to the mansion where our original doctor, the one who was framed, finds out that the doctor framed him. The person he was accused of murdering has actually been operated on and is no longer able to function mentally. And all these people escape. They kill Lon Chaney Jr.'s character, which was kind of sad because he didn't do anything bad. He
just
manipulated. And then kill the doctor by throwing him and his wife off of a staircase that didn't have a railing. Always have a railing on your staircase. And then it kind of cuts to the end title card.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
So what's score plot? Pros for me is it is a very simple story that is easy to follow.
Yeah.
And it's realistic enough that I was able to kind of buy into the characters.
Yeah, I mean, we hear stories all the time of shitty doctors doing shitty things, and this is just like that taken to like the next degree, which is scary how like realistic it is, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
But no, I would agree. Like, it is, it doesn't try to do anything too crazy. It's like they knew the limits of what they could express and show on screen, and they kept to that. And I think it is refined really well. Like, it moves at a good pace. It's not too long. We don't like lose. There's no like overly long expositions. Like, it is. It keeps itself moving in a decent way, and yeah, I don't know. It's you're right. It is very simple, and like, you know, sometimes I can like hurt it a little bit, but I think it didn't in this case because it was easy to follow, and that's kind of nice, especially because of what we had lately.
Yeah, and the other thing, and this is kind of why this isn't going to score very high for me, is that there's nothing really to write home about. There's nothing really special. Like, the plot is just a very simple.
It's simple, yeah.
But I had nothing wrong with it. I just have nothing really to praise either.
That's fair. I mean, yeah, like, it's not boring, but it's not overly exciting. And it's not too long, but it doesn't do anything crazy in that. It's just very like, it's okay.
Yeah. And honestly, I gave it a 5. I thought it was very like middle of the road.
I gave it a 6 because I possibly, because I was like, oh man, remember what we watched last week?
Cinematography is actually one of my higher areas. I really liked the brain operation scene. I liked a lot of the way they framed the Spaniard's office. I liked how he moved about the room and the way the camera kind of operated, how he hid poisoning the poor woman's drink. I like how he pushed her inside the wall. That was really kind of unique with the chair in front of it. I like the tension of when the cops come in there and like he sits down in the chair right in front of like the disappearing bed. And then I liked the way they moved about the castle. I liked how the secret dungeon was behind the fireplace and how they hid in the fireplace. And even though it's dumb to not have a railing, I kind of liked how that was how the people he operated on killed him in the end.
Yeah.
And I don't know, we'll get more to the audio, but I also like the doctor's performance, but that's audio.
I mean, even like to the point of like how, because there was no like quote unquote monster, they didn't really have to go too crazy with like the like costuming and like makeup and stuff, which I think really helped sell it, because it is a very like human story. I mean, I think the craziest we get is when like the three of them are attacking them, right?
And it's their just eyes like, are like whited over or whatever from all the operations.
Yeah, and like the one lady's like got like patches of hair, but that's it. Like that's really as crazy as it gets. Like, but again, like I agree with you. It does do some like unique and interesting things with like how they frame a lot of the stuff that happens. And
it felt like House of Wax, where it was like almost like you're looking at a stage performance.
Yes, that's a really good way of putting it. It's like, it reminded me of like how they shot the first person, like the point of view perspective in Dr. Jekyll, which was like the one part I liked about that movie, was like how they just like framed everything really well. And I think that it's the same case here.
I have nothing really negative. I mean, this is a low budget, it's an independent horror film. But I thought the costumes were all good. Like you said, it was simple because it was a human story, so it wasn't anything too crazy. It was very easy to tell who the characters were.
Yeah.
And we had a small cast, so everybody was very individualistic. I gave it a 6.5.
I gave it a 7.
It's not often you score higher than me in these older movies.
Well, it's going to change here.
Okay. Audio. This is my highest section. I have a feeling the screeching women didn't do much for you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
But I thought the performance of the doctor was great. I think anchoring it in an almost Batman and Robin, Mr. Freeze kind of dynamic, right, where he's trying to save his wife.
Chris, yeah.
It made it, instead of him just being sadistic and like trying to push science like a Nazi doctor or whatever, here he's doing terrible things, but he's doing it because he's trying to save his wife.
Yeah.
And he's trying to bring in people who he thinks can help him further achieve that goal. And there's something so, like, I feel like if you have the wrong actor in that role, that emotion won't come through. But when he goes and talks to her, like when we first realize what's going on and when he's carrying her around, like, you definitely feel his love for her. I thought the doctor who he framed to come and help him, I thought his realization about what was happening made sense, because he didn't want to believe it right away because this guy just saved his life. And so it kind of took a little bit for him to get there. And I found that journey of the doctor was realistic and well portrayed. You put Bela Lugosi and Lon Chaney Jr. on the screen, I'm going to be a happy camper. Like, I'm not going to complain for a second about that. But I did feel the fainting women didn't bother me, but I did feel our female performances were kind of hindered by a lack of giving them anything.
Respect. You can say it. Respect.
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah, that's always my biggest issue with this, is like the overcharacterizations. And it's weird because I don't think that really happened. I mean, obviously, like, we have our screaming women, which is it's like one of my, I might change my trope because it is really getting to me. But other than that, like I did really like the doctor. I did like the doctor he framed. There is like one scene that kind of like took me out of liking how these performances were coming across.
Okay.
And it's the scene where she is trying to... Sorry, I don't remember anybody's name. So you're just
either do
have
I.
To deal with me. Yeah. Okay, so where she...
The daughter of Lon Chaney.
Yeah, is trying to convince him to go to the cops.
Yes.
Or, like, turn him in, basically. It felt very, like, 1930s detective noir. Like, I was half expecting him to slap her.
And she was all, she was becoming, what's the word?
Hysterical.
Hysterical. Thank you. Thank
you.
Yeah,
it was, that for me was like, oh boy, this is
oh, I can't wow. wait to hear we got about 20 million miles to Earth with our femme fatale. Literally, there's a giant monster roaming the Earth. She's like, I had a nightmare that I went and got a coffee and you never came and the candle kept dwindling down. But that's for another episode.
Yeah.
And then the final thing for audio for me is the score was okay in the moment, but if you try to get me to tell you anything about it now, I couldn't do it.
I literally watched it today and I couldn't tell you.
But overall, I thought this was the strongest, like I said, the strongest part. I gave audio a 7.
I gave it a 4.
How scary. Go ahead.
So this one's interesting because I think it really, it's weird how, like, how much obviously it drew on fears back when it came out, but it like still pervades to this day. There's a lot of like, just all it takes is one doctor to be just really fucking shitty. And like, I mean, if you're going to doctor and you're going for an operation, who the fuck knows, right? Like it's very, what makes it scary to me is like how based in reality it is, and like how this is something that obviously, like, without castles and stuff, because I'm in Canada and you're in America, this could happen. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, well, I wouldn't be surprised if this happened, but like, this isn't something that you, this is something you could theoretically see on, like, doctor was caught after 10 years of blah, 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 blah. Like, this is very human, and that is, to me, what makes it scary.
I think it is the thing that even if we've gone through some of these crappier movies, it is what the mad scientist subgenre that we've kind of coined is good at, right? Is science gone awry. And I think similar to the Jurassic Park novel, where you have someone who really thinks he's doing a service and is just blinded by everything else, that makes it horrifying. Because the fact this doctor is just trying to save his wife, and he'll do whatever it takes because she's everything to him, she's his entire world, and he will do everything he can to restore her, it's not hard to imagine someone creating a potion that can feign death, right, in order to put these people in a situation where he can operate on their brain.
Yeah.
And then we talked about either last week or the week before about how Elon Musk is moving on to human trials with his, like, implant for the brain.
Yeah.
And there's something good about, there's something scary about that. There's, when it's grounded in science, we talked about this before, it's a lot different than, like, the paranormal, because in the paranormal, you have to believe, right? If you don't believe in aliens, alien horror is not going to scare you. If you don't believe in ghosts, poltergeist movies aren't going to scare you. But, like, there have been people.
Do you believe in doctors?
Yeah, exactly. Fuck, who knows anymore? But there, that is what's scary. I think because the plot is so vanilla, and because, like, we aren't really getting, like, the best when it comes to, like, all this other stuff we talk about, it isn't the scariest thing we've done, like, by far. But I do think there are some horror elements here that really kind of hold this up.
Yeah, I would agree.
I gave House Scary a 4.5.
I gave it a 4.
To review our scores, for plot, I gave it a 5. Justin gave it a 6. For cinematography, I gave it a 6.5. Justin gave it a 7. For audio, I gave it a 7. Justin gave it a 4. And for House Scary, I gave it a 4.5. And Justin gave it a 4. Somehow, I still scored it higher than you. I thought for sure this was going to be a first on the show. but it comes out to a Here's Johnny final score of a 55. Let me scroll here. So, I can't even see the bottom of our list, which is always a good sign.
Yeah, that's good.
Sorry, we're recording late on a Friday night, and Justin and I are both exhausted
from the heat. I'm yawning a lot. I'm sorry.
No, I'm holding mine in. It is tied with Captive State, Resident Evil Apocalypse, and Underwater. Sorry, Rachel. The films below it are Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, Dracula, Halloween 4, Return of Michael Myers, OG Pet Sematary, and Signs. And the film above it, only one, is The Hidden from 1987. What the fuck was that?
Dude, I... Listen, there's a reason I didn't ask to push this to Saturday, because if I push it to Saturday, I would have forgotten one of the movies I watched already this week. So,
That was the one with the guy from Twin Peaks, a cop and FBI agent. Yep. Kyle for answers after law-abiding people suddenly become violent criminals. It was the alien one with the guns.
Oh! You know what? It's weird. The further I get away from that one...
The more you like it?
Yeah.
Thanks, Eddie. That was an Eddie forced entry for our crappy horror film.
Yeah, that was... I mean, it was bad, crappy. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, we have watched bad stuff. We have watched bad. That is our review of The Black Sleep. We're going to play some music and head on into the closing. Episode after this, and that will actually be next week for you guys. It is 20 million miles to Earth, so we'll talk about that then. Justin, any last thoughts?
No, I got nothing.
All right, patrons, stick around. Justin has one quiz for me, and then that's it. Thanks for hanging out with us, and until next time, stay scary. The Here's Johnny podcast is brought to you by Larry and Justin. You can find the show on Twitter at Here's Johnny Cast, and you can find Larry at Beaver LA.
You can find Justin at Pickle Thing, and you can email the show at heresjohnnypodcast@gmail.com. You can look us up on Facebook at Here's Johnny Podcast.
As always, in the show notes, you can find links to the Discord and to the website. We are also on Instagram at @HeresJohnny_podcast.
Also in the show notes, we'll have a link to the Twitch and YouTube channels. And if you would like to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/HeresJohnnyPodcast. Every cent goes into the show. And yeah, we just really use it to make the show better. Again, I just want to say thank you very much to our patrons. You guys help make this possible.
But yeah, Patreon is the way we support the show. We aren't looking to get rich. And like Justin said, every dollar, every cent, it all goes back in. There's some pretty cool tiers, so head on and look at that.
But until next week, see you guys later.